Hardcore Junkies.
What's going on, golf addicts? Thanks for downloading the Tour Junkies podcast. This is the Dean and DeLuca 2017 episode. It's a big episode because it's Pat week. Pat Mayo filling in for David, so you get a double dose of the Pats this time around. We're going to give you an update on a couple things, give you a few announcements, recap the Byron Nelson because Billy Ho Train walked away a winner over Jason Day in a playoff, and later on, we'll review our picks from last week, mine and Pat's, and we'll get to the DK pricing for the Dean and DeLuca, hopefully. You saw some green screens this week, and God willing, we can get you a positive ROI for this week in Dallas, because, Pat, let's be frank here. David, as it turns out, could be the one who's just carrying all this and lighting up the green screens with me and you. It could be a lot of just nothing.
That is true, actually. And by the way, I believe I sensed a hint of a Southern accent in that intro, and so very good, Pat. I thought that was pretty good.
I'm going out of my way not to do it. I don't want to come on like I'm a parody. People do the Canadian accent back at me, and they just sound like they're from, like, North Dakota. And, like, I don't really sound like that. I listen to myself for, like, 7 hours a day while I'm editing. That's not what I sound like.
Well, maybe you're a Southerner at heart, you know? I mean, you could just...
I could see that.
Yeah. I'm
from the East Coast of Canada, which is... weirdly kind of like the south of Canada, despite the fact that we're north and it's east, but, you know, we have very good manners, very polite. We're not the big city folk.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the Southerners right there, you know. We say yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, and things like that. So, well, all right, so let's talk about Pat Week then. I mean, this is we don't have David, just thank God. We get 1 week without David. I want to talk about you. So I want to know, We're going to go through some questions about Pat Mayo, because you host several shows, but we don't get to know the real Pat Mayo. So I'm going to ask you a few questions. I want to start off. I don't want to talk about any golf, things like that. I just want to talk about Pat Mayo. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, anything you want to know.
All right. So first off, here's what I want to know. How did you get started in this business?
In fantasy or golf?
In fantasy talking business on Fantasy Network, podcast, whatever else.
Okay, well, it started the moment I graduated from college, which was in 2008, because I was a slacker and took like 5.5 years to get an arts degree. That's always fun. But I didn't know what to do. So I actually, my last class that I took in university, or what you guys call college, I suppose, this was in Canada, we went to the, I signed up for this Model UN class because it was a free trip to New York, and it was basically a free A. So I flew to New York City for this thing with my college. Didn't go to a single thing, just met a couple guys, a couple girls. We just went out drinking the entire time, which was awesome. And then I just got talking football with, like, two of them. And the amount that I knew about football compared to these American guys was, like, astonishing. And they were kind of blown away that a Canadian knew anything about football to begin with. And I was like, huh, I'm a pretty good writer. I'll start writing a blog. So I wrote a blog for like 3 months just on like Blogspot. It got picked up by this like Thinky website. I wrote for them for like 6 months. And then that website got acquired by Roto Experts, where I still write today. And of like the 8 people that got brought along for the ride of getting bought out and being replaced over at Roto Experts, 7 of them were gone within like 3 months. And I'm still there 7 years later. But in that time, I went back to school, to broadcasting school. And then I figured, you know, I can make a run of this. No one really does video or audio in the fantasy realm, so I might as well get on top of that. So I just learned how to do everything myself and just started shooting stuff out of my, like, one-bedroom apartment on a green screen, and then it all just led to this.
So that leads me to another question, because media today is very different than it used to be. And I think you and I were talking about this earlier in the week, but ESPN, they fired a bunch of people recently, and I think they're kind of moving towards this digital media podcast, all that kind of stuff. They want their announcers and reporters to be able to do a lot of different things. You know, I mean, they were showing freaking drone racing the other day on TV. So Is that kind of what you think? Do you think media is sort of moving in that direction to what you are doing mostly today?
Yeah, I do actually. But it's not like what I'm doing. It's the savings that I bring doing what I do. So, I mean, the Pat Mayo Hour, like I share a studio with a whole bunch of people so we can shoot like 8 shows out of it. I'm the only person that works on my show. Occasionally, like while we're doing the show, someone switches between a camera that has me and a camera that has like the graphic of the person who's on the other line. But everything else on that show is done by me. I do all the prep. I do all the editing. I do all the sound mixing. I do all the promotion. I release it all. I host the show. So the only cost of the show is really paying me. That's it. And it
that sounds a little bit like David, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's the way that it's running now. Now, obviously, at ESPN, it's not going to be that way, but you're going to start to see more and more things that slowly move to that. Because, I mean, I fill up on the actual TV channel. Yes, Fantasy Sports Network is an actual TV channel, shockingly enough. But and you can order it. It's on cable systems. I would recommend you do it. We have a cool ticker. But I provide like 6 hours of content a week. And I mean, more than that hits the web just because some stuff is unsavory enough for actual, you know, terrestrial television or terrestrial radio. But just being able to shoot the show, repurpose it for audio, repurpose it for internet videos, cut it up into 2-minute clips, all that kind of thing. I think you're going to see more and more stuff go that way. Like, even look at something like PTI. Like PTI is about, unless you're paying Kornheiser and Wilbon millions, which you're probably not. Maybe Wilbon a few million. I know Kornheiser doesn't do much at ESPN outside of that now. He just has his own podcast. But like the talent, that's it. And that's the only reason that people tune in. You can create as cool of a concept as you want, but if people don't like the personalities, that's where all the money now has to go, because everything is so cheap to produce. And I think that's the main reason that ESPN let a lot of these guys go. Like, it was the entire hockey division. Well, they don't have hockey rights, so of course, what the hell do they care about hockey? They don't. It's like, you know, local beat reporters for the NFL, that kind of thing. And you can outsource that to like free blogs that do just as good of stuff, and the internet has caught up to the point where these guys are just as sourced as the random ESPN beat writer. So it's all things that if you can't self-produce yourself at this point, A, you're probably not going to get on air. The only reason that I learned how to do any of this stuff is I always just wanted to be in front of the camera talent was no one was going to put me on, and I didn't know what I was going to do. Fortunately, you know, fantasy worked out for me, but I was looking at, you know, there's the Canadian Sports Center, and that's always kind of like the big thing that broadcasters get into, and that's what I wanted to do when I first got into it. Then I started to see how like Sports Center worked. I was like, well, I get to have zero opinion on anything. I get to read highlights someone else wrote, but like even that model is going down the drain. So I learned how to use a camera. I learned how to edit. I learned how to do After Effects and build graphics and things like that. And I was able to put myself on air via the internet, and then, you know, someone noticed.
Well, you do a great job at it. I think you're obviously one of the hardest workers out there in what we do. And but you're big into golf also. So, you know, I know you talked about football was kind of your first thing that sort of got you in as far as talking fantasy, but you know, golf is, I think, probably the fastest growing fantasy sport out there, especially with DFS. So give me your thoughts on that. And then I also want to know one thing. Do you actually play real golf?
So to answer the second part first, yes, but I play far less than I used to. When I moved to Toronto in 2010, it turns out the courses around here are way more expensive to play, like legit more expensive, and there's no course like in the city that's any good. So in Ontario up here, like I'll play maybe twice a year, but when I go home, I usually go home for a week to the East Coast or 2 weeks over the summer, and I'll probably play around like 10 to 14 times. I'll just play every single day, maybe 2 rounds a day to kind of get my fix in. But now, growing up, I started playing golf when I was like 8. My dad thought it was very important that I learn how to play golf. And I'm not very good still, but I can still pick up at almost any point, I can pick up whatever clubs, play whatever, and I can shoot anywhere between 85 and 95, depending on the day. It's just, I never cracked 80. I rarely break 100 unless I'm playing at a very tough course, but it just sort of the thing at this point. If I could ever learn how to drive the ball, I feel like I would be a lot better, but I'm so terrible off the tee. I would not be good this week at Dean DeLuca, put it that way. I'd be in the woods every single hole. But what was the first part of that question?
I kind of forgot.
Golf as a growing DFS sport. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, football is clearly going to be number one. And the reason I mentioned football off the top is that was really how I got a break, is people started noticing my football column. I joined the FSWA, and like the second year I was a part of it, I got nominated for a whole bunch of football awards, like football writer. I was nominated for baseball writer that year, too. And it seems like 3 decades ago that I used to write about baseball, but I used to write about it every day. But the viewership and the traffic and people noticing you, football was so popular. I mean, it's one of the reasons the golf stuff has taken off for me so much, was that I was one of the first people on the scene to DFS golf and just talking about fantasy golf, and just, it was just dumb luck on my part that a lot of people who were interested in like DraftKings and FanDuel football started becoming interested in DraftKings, or at least in DraftKings, and even like fantasy feud at the time, golf. I think it's the second biggest one. I know that, you know, you're going to have your hardcores that exclusively play baseball and then basketball and then hockey and all that, but it seems like the biggest crossover one is golf. And frankly, if you're just doing it for entertainment value, which really you should be, like, I'm not a professional DFS player. I'm a professional broadcaster, weirdly. It sounds weird to say out loud, but like, I'm not making my living off playing DraftKings.
Yeah,
I make my living talking about DraftKings. Some people do. Like, there's awesome players out there. I'm not one of those people. I'm good at research. I'm good at information. I'm good at presenting that. That's why I don't sell my, I mean, I'm sure the company would prefer that I put everything I do behind a paywall and sell it, but you know, I'm not winning you millions. I could win you some with some good picks, but I prefer it be free. That way you can't get too mad at me when the picks are really bad. And it just takes the pressure off me to go out and just kind of make crazy opinions and just get people excited about golf. But it seems like it doesn't matter what DFS sport that you play golf. You get to do your 3 days of research. So it's set up the most like football, which is the most popular. I think people can process that in their minds pretty easily. You get your 3 days to research, Monday to Thursday, you put in your lineups, and then you get 2 days of just sheer excitement. Oh, my guy's at the top of the leaderboard after five holes. Oh God, my guy's in last place after the first round. Then he battles back. You get the cut sweat. Then you get the Saturday sweat. Then you get the Sunday sweat. Like, you know, if you're talking about like bang for your buck, golf is by far the best DFS game.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, actually. I think, and you know, when David and I first started doing what we do, and we're the same, I mean, we enjoy it, we have a good time playing it, but obviously it's not something that we do professionally. But, you know, when we started, we listened to several podcasts out there, and there just wasn't anything to us that was that interesting, except for you. You are our favorite one to listen to, and so I gotta say, you helped get us in this. Because we wanted to, I don't want to say we wanted to be just like you, Pat, but we loved what you did, but we felt like, you know, there was room for a few more voices out there. And so that's why we started what we did. But, again, you're right. I love just the lead up, the research, and then you got 4 days to just kind of see what happens. So unlike, you know, when you have to look at baseball every night or NBA every night or whatever. So I am totally with you there. All right. So
and I think that there's a thing where people from, like I said, all the DFS sports all seem to play. Whether you're a baseball fanatic, you'll play golf. If you're a basketball fanatic, you'll play golf. Like, baseball people, if they're big on baseball, they're not just going to randomly play a hockey slate that night or an MMA slate. They'll play golf because, frankly, golf is real random and anyone can kind of win at it.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, look at the past two winners we've had on tour. You know, you had Siwoo Kim at, you know, had missed, what, 7 of his 8 or 8 straight cuts. I can't remember what it was with a few withdrawals in there. And then he wins the Players. And then you have Billy Horschel last week, who's missed 4 straight cuts. And then he wins, you know, the tournament last week. So golf is extremely hard to predict. It's just, you know, we can do all the research. We can talk about all the stats. We can talk about recent form and course history. But in the end, I'm sure you would agree. It's just, it's hard to pick.
Yeah, that's why the biggest success that I've had, it's why I don't bet people, like, I do a lot of, like, golf betting, and I don't bet a lot of people that are, like, I'm not betting DJ at 5-1, like, that does mean nothing, like, he has to win at that point, like, I feel far more comfortable taking 6 or 7 shots down the list, not betting it, like, basically, for one DJ, I could bet eight guys that are 50 to 1 and beyond and get a huge payday from it. And all you need to do is hit like one every 3 months, or even hit like three winners a year that are 80 to 1 and above, and you're looking really good. And it lends itself to, like you said, you have these out of nowhere winners, and hopefully you can hit those guys. I haven't hit any of the past three, but it's... anyone can win. It's like why I've been doing really well with these first round leader bets, because legitimately anyone in the field can be first round leader. Doesn't matter how bad they are, how good they are. For one round, anyone can beat anyone in golf.
Shouldn't you just take Ricky Barnes as first round leader like every week? And then, I mean, you're probably going to hit that eventually, right?
Yeah, I should. It's something I did all last year, and I haven't bet him at all this year, but I had James Hahn last week, so that really worked out.
Yeah, that was a good one. All right, so we're gonna talk Byron Nelson real quick in a second, but I gotta, you know, David and I spent 8 weeks before we just recorded just on our own trying to find out about each other and things like that. You and I only have one night, so I gotta find out some things about you. So I'm gonna ask you a few quick hitter questions, and you know, we just gotta gain some rapport here, Pat, because this is our first time. So are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right, you're getting married here soon. So how did you meet your future bride?
Tinder.
Really? Tinder? Okay, well, yeah. I can't relate there, because I met Sally, Tinder did not exist. But we did meet at a bar. Does that count? Is that kind of similar? Are we on the same page
there?
Yeah,
I mean, I guess. I mean, that's how I used to meet people. And then this app came along where I could just meet like a million people right away. It was awesome. Like, when I first got it, I was living in Manhattan. I lived there for about a year, which was awesome. And then I moved back to Toronto. I mean, we have 6 million people. It was the way that I always look at it. I mean, it's a hookup app, at least at the time it was. And then you can exploit it for that all you want. But it's just a great way to meet people. Like, you just the volume of it's like people who play 150 DFS lineups. Like, you know, you just give yourself a better shot by going out there, because frankly, I mean, if you're trying to pick up people at a bar all the time, you're not going to meet the best of people all the time. Put it that way.
Yeah, well, you're right. You're right. Okay, that's interesting.
So you got lucky.
Okay, good. All right, so be honest. I'm pretty sure you listened to the show, right?
You listened to it.
Okay. Whose picks do you typically like better or tend to go with?
David's. Me?
Why are you so quick with that, Pat?
It's because I know. It's like people on my show when they say, is it me or the guest that they listen to for the picks? It's always the guest.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't like that answer, but we'll go on. Okay. The number one, you know, we have a lot of tour pros on the show. So the number one tour pro that has not been on yet that you'd like to see on our show?
I think Rory would be an awesome interview. I know he's a tough get. But
that's going to be a tough get.
That'd be awesome. Well, and of people that are like feasible too.
Yeah,
yet?
Let's go feasible.
Have you had William McGirt on?
We haven't.
I think he'd be good.
I agree. Southerner, went to Wofford College, I believe. You probably have no idea where Wofford is, do you?
I know that they're in the tournament like sometimes as like a 16 seed.
Yeah, Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Ooh.
There you go. Kind of near Columbia and Charlotte. All right, I got just a couple more. Wine, yep. Wine or beer?
Depends on the mood. I'm more of a beer guy, but now that you mentioned that I'm getting married, I got to cut back on the beer, move on to the wine. It's a bit more slimming.
Okay. I did the same thing, but I don't know if it worked for me, but yeah. Okay. let me see. All right. One of the things that people have pointed out on the show for me lately is that I say the word again a lot.
Again! Yeah, of course you do.
Do you have... What is your again? Do you have a word
I mean all the time. I mean, like, it's just whenever I'm trying to catch my thought. Because when I do the show, like, some people think that I'm reading off a teleprompter, and I'm not. I'm just staring in the camera, yammering like an idiot. It's me trying to catch my thought and trying to think about what I'm saying next. It's just something I've been trying to break for ages, and then I forget when I'm actually talking.
So how am I going to break from again? Or is it ever going to happen? Give me some advice.
What you need to do is constantly listen to the show. So listen to it over and over and over, especially spots that you say again a lot. And then it will get ingrained so much in your mind that you shouldn't say it. You'll eventually come up with another word that you just say too much, but it won't be again.
Okay, I like that. I'm gonna take your advice there. Okay, all right.
It's like that scene in A Clockwork Orange where they just expose him to too much violence, and every time that he wants to be violent afterwards, he just throws up and gets sick. That'll be like you with again. I can even piece your eyes open and do all that crazy stuff for you.
So maybe I should get, since David does a lot of our audio work and editing, I should just get him to edit up every single time I say again and put it in this long again, cut. And just play it over and over again, so it just I hate it. Maybe that's what I should do.
Oh, you don't even need to get David to do that. I mean, if you want to, really torture
just
David,
listen to one show. To do that.
No, what you need to do is get the listeners to do that for you, because I have some awesome listeners. I guarantee you, a lot of them are the same listeners,
yeah.
And you guys probably have even better ones as well. There's a listener out there that will do that for you. Make the again supercut, send it to you, put it on your phone, and just keep pounding it through your head.
Yeah, well, that is true. Okay, well, again, let's move on. How about that?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, so Byron Nelson, let's talk about that real quick. I'm going to go through our picks, at least mine and David's pick. You weren't involved in these, but unless you just want to...
I can review mine as well. They weren't good.
Okay, well, ours were okay, but not great. We picked 32 players. We had 4 top fives, including Jason Day. We had 12 in the top 30 and 10 missed cuts, which is pretty high. That's not very good. I'm just going to go ahead and admit that. Also, one of the things we do on the RotoGrinders website is we have our Shot in the Arm product, where we list our great Fantastic Four and also our top fades, which our top fades last week were Brooks Koepka and JB. And early on, Koepka was looking, that was looking like a terrible fade. But when he finished, in the 50s, so I think that turned out to be a pretty good fade, and JB missed the cut. So, and then you had Spieth miss the cut again, which is now 2 in a row. So that is kind of my initial just thoughts on how we did last week. How about you, Pat? What were your thoughts? How did you do?
I nailed the fades. The fades we were on the same page with. I faded Brooks and Spieth. Those were the two guys that I was staying away from, and I went heavy Dustin Johnson, which turned out to be a mistake. But in my, I do pivot plays every week, and just for tournament plays, I usually play 20 to 50 lineups kind of thing, and guys that I would sprinkle in that I thought were going to be at low ownership. So Jason Day was my favorite of the top 5 guys. Turns out I probably should have used him a bit more. But Dustin for me at the top turned all right. I had Reed, Finau, and Duffner as my next level picks. None of them really spiked. Duffner and Finau were fine. They all made the cut, which was nice. And then this middle area really got me because I went with Snediger and Henley. Henley and Dillette really cost me a lot of money last week because I had Byung Han Ahn massively overweight on him. But Snediger, Henley, and Dillette all in that area really kind of crushed the potential upside. I didn't end up with very many 6 of 6s because of it, and that really killed my overall. But in the middle ranges, I went with Woodland, Dillette, Sung Kang, JT Poston, which was just horrible, and Boo Weekly, which was fine. I had Nick Taylor, Swafford, who was awful, Keegan, Lahiri, who was awful, and Chad Campbell, who actually turned out to be okay at $6,200. So it was a very sort of tread water-ish week. Yeah, the right combination was in there to make some money, but obviously no Billy Horschel, so that's not good.
Well, I actually ended up with a couple Day Horschel lineups, but like you, I had Dillette in a ton of lineups and also Poston, and that killed. I mean, I still cashed, but I think I could have had a chance at some serious money if I had had all 6. But Billy Horschel winning. I mean, he's had 4 straight missed cuts. The guy is. He's an interesting figure. He came out last week after the whole incident where he threw the club at the caddy, and I don't care what he says. I mean, that's basically what he did. But going back, I don't know if you saw today. Did you see the tweet today from his wife?
I did. I read that through. That was very interesting, and it's weird because I'm sure there are more golfers going through stuff like this, and just we don't know about it, and that's where golf is such a mental game. having things like that off the course where you can really dwell on it and maybe bring it onto the course, I think affects golfers more than any other sport.
Yeah, I agree. I think if it's one of those sports where if their mind is not in the right place for whatever reason it is, they're just not going to be playing well. I mean, it just is what it is. I mean, they can't. I mean, maybe Tiger was probably one of the guys when he was in his prime that could maybe put things like that, you know, out of his focus. But then you look at him when he got older and then what happened with, you know, Elon and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, it just totally shot his confidence in his game. So it's one of the biggest things out there, and why I think that recent form is something that has to be a factor in the players that you're looking at every week. Because if you're looking at a guy now, obviously our last two winners don't prove that, but you know, I think if you're playing well, you're on a trend that's positive. To me, those are going to be the top players that I'm looking at. That's just me.
I completely agree. I think that some people will say that course history doesn't matter. I tend to disagree with that. I think that course history does matter, but recent form over all things else. Have you been using this this Fantasy National? Are you beta testing that? Because I am. Have you used it yet?
Yes, I am. I actually have it pulled up on one of my computers that's in front of me right now. So,
and eventually, when this is released to the public, this is going to be what people use, I feel, to look for their stats, look at recent form, because being able to separate by like the last 12 or 24 or even 50 rounds just shows you the trend that people are going. Being able to, you know, click on a player and see what he's done and see where he's playing well, I think that really makes a lot of sense. Like, we can look at results, but how did they get to the results? And that's what I'm starting to like about this is, yes, recent form is one thing. You could see a guy have a miscut T17, T12, T13, T27, and now it's this week. But how did he get to those? Is he putting the lights out? Is his tee to green game great over those rounds? And I think that's the next step that we're all going to need to take, because recent form is one thing, stats are one thing. Can we mix them together? And we're getting close to that.
Yeah, I think you're right. This special, very special site that we're beta testing right now is incredible, and I'm still learning a lot about it, but I'm with you. I do like it. All right, so we're going to get into some picks here. We got a few things that the Tour Junkies put out this week. We did have a contest, and this was based off the McHamburger bet. And I don't know if you saw. Did you see that, Pat? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
What was it? Someone eating too much McDonald's?
So this guy. So this happened to be a friend of a contact of ours that he bet that he could eat $1,000 worth of McDonald's in 36 hours. And by the end of this, it all went down on Friday and Saturday, so over this past weekend. I believe on both sides of the bet, so that he could or that he could not do it, there was maybe a couple $100,000 that was out there. Now, he did call it off early, so I don't know how that affected the money. And that also affected the contest, because the contest was, how many calories do you think he ate? Well, let me just tell you this. I'm going to let you guess, and then I'm going to announce the winner. So
he
ended up eating about, he cut it off, I think, at like $150. And not one of those dollars was spent on an actual hamburger, because he was trying to be strategic. So I want you to tell me what you think the calorie number was. Now, I'll give you let me give you a hint. He had sides of avocado, apples. He bought like 50 packs of apples and put them in and made them like applesauce. He had chicken, grilled chicken, like just straight grilled chicken, things like that.
So he tried to eat healthy at McDonald's.
He tried to eat healthy to start out, and then you know, he wanted to eat. He was trying to go after the most expensive side items. Like, apples are expensive, apparently, for McDonald's. Sides of guac or avocado or whatever. Bacon. He had some bacon. He was like dipping the bacon in the avocado. So that was kind of what he was trying to do, because he was trying to run the tab up as much as he could.
So total. Was there any drinks involved with this?
No drinks. No drinks.
So overall calories on $150?
Yeah.
See, this hurts me because I don't know what things cost in America. I assume it's way cheaper.
Yes, probably so.
Yeah, McDonald's is actually, I wouldn't say expensive here, but it's not like being in America where everything's like 30 cents. I'm going to go with $150 worth, dollar per calorie, let's say times 100, 33,000 calories.
Wow. See, now you are right in line with most every single answer that we got. But actually, that is way too high, almost quadruple too high. The actual number was 6,310 calories. And I don't think you listened to the part where I told you that he cut it off early.
He still spent the $150, didn't he?
He did spend the $150, but he was supposed to do 36 hours, and he quit after like 12 hours. So,
but if he spent the, I was doing it based off the $150 spent.
Okay, all right. Well, you were still too high. So, but our winner was at Lincoln Duff. So at LincolnDuff, he guessed 7,500 calories. He was the closest one. So, Lincoln, if that's your name, you're going to win a Tour Junkies care package. I get to pack that because I have all the Tour Junkies swag, so I'm just going to give you what I think you should get. And appreciate everybody getting in on that. Just something a little different and fun to do. On to the Tweet of the Week. I really, you know, David does the Tweet of the Week normally because he spends a lot more time on Twitter than I do. But the one thing that I thought was pretty funny is we had, and this necessarily wasn't this guy's tweet, but he was the one that notified me of this. And I don't know if you saw it, Pat, but you probably did. There was a time when a time when Billy Horschel was putting, and the camera panned just kind of across the crowd, and you see this guy in a red shirt just grabbing
nipple twist guy?
The what?
The nipple twist guy?
Yeah, the nipple twist guy. And we had a listener / follower, Matt Chastain, and his Twitter handle is at Packet Boy, which is weird. It's at Packet and then uppercase B-O-Y. He tweeted that at us, and that's the only thing I could come up with, because I thought that was funny as shit, but that was the only one I had. So there you go.
It's not bad. I mean, I barely remember any tweets that get sent my way.
Yeah. So that was Tweet of the Week. Last thing we're going to get into the course breakdown and also weather is if you're playing Euro Tour events on DraftKings this week, you got to go out and follow our boy at Ashley Morrison. He is at Ashley Morrison. He is going to be on the grounds at Wentworth for the BMW Championship, which he told me, he texted me earlier today, that is kind of like their Masters. They love this course. They love this tournament. And he is going to be tweeting out just information on the course this week, the conditions that he sees, the players, and how they're doing. And then also, he has an article for us every week. It is on our blog, which is One Groove Low on tourjunkies.net. So go check out Ash Morrison. You need to have Ash on your show sometime, Pat. I'm going to go ahead and plug him right now. The guy knows his stuff. He's kind of a mini tour player over there and does a really good job. So check out his articles and maybe you can get him on your show once in a while, Pat.
Maybe, but I don't talk about Euro golf ever.
Yeah, but he can talk. U.S. golf too. It's kind of like Ben Coley. You had Ben Coley on your show, didn't you?
Yeah, I have been on for usually the U.S. and the Open Championship every year. But the hard thing is I found out even with Ben, it's hard to get the times right for when I film and when they're actually awake.
It is. You're right. I agree. It was the same way when we did Ben, because Ben's extremely good. So if anybody's
at rules.
Yeah, if anybody out there has not checked him out, I would go look up Ben Coley on Twitter. Does great stuff. All right, let's get into the course and the weather this week. We are at the 2017 Dean and DeLuca Invitational in Fort Worth, Texas at Colonial Country Club. 7,200 yards. We got another par 70 this week and bent grass again. You know, this course is one of those where I think almost everybody in the field has a shot. Now, there's a few that don't, like your Stephen Bowditches of the world. And I saw somebody else. I can't remember who it was that I can't even believe is in the tournament. But, you know, it's not your longest of courses. You got small greens, probably one of the smallest on tour. You know, it's a decent field. You got seven of the top 30 this week in the world. And so what are your initial thoughts on this course in this week, Pat?
Well, when I went back and looked at a lot of the winners and guys that have played well here, some of the shorter, more accurate hitters have had a lot of success, like Tom's won, ZJ won twice, Stricker's won here in the past. But I started looking at like who the more recent winners have been, like even to throw Duffner into that mix, he came runner up here twice as well. But like Adam Scott won this event. So it leads me to believe that ball striking, because Sergio's won as well at Colonial, so it leads me to believe that something like ball striking is somewhat important, but I think people are going to point a lot to, let's say, you know, driving accuracy, which I do think is important, but where it's only 7,200 yards, I think a lot of guys just aren't going to hit driver off the tee. So when you have, you know, some of the more erratic players like Tony Finau off the tee, you know, and they're hitting either hybrid or they're hitting like 5-iron off the tee on some of these shorter holes. There's not a lot of long ones. That it's going to improve their accuracy to the point where driving accuracy as a stat doesn't really matter. So I think that strokes gained off the tee is still the big one here instead of looking at driving accuracy. However, I think strokes gained approach is the stat that I'm really going to hone on, because that's the attacking. That is the scoring type of stat. Now, if that is down and guys are not hitting these smaller greens, then you're going to need that around the green game. I mean, that's how Spieth won last year. He wasn't hitting every green. He was chipping and he was putting. And that's how he ended up in the winner's circle. But the year before, like, Chris Kirk did very much the same thing. But the years that Duffner ended up coming in second, he was just ball striking and sticking it 10 feet to the pin and being Jason Duffner and not being able to putt and actually end up with a win. So I think there's many ways that you can attack this course. It feels like strokes gained around the green and putting will save a lot of people, but it's strokes gained approach and off the tee that will have the guys in the position to win in the first place.
Well, I am, and I'm totally with you on strokes gained approach and strokes gained off the tee. Those are both probably my top two stat categories this week. And I looked at around the green, also proximity though. Just with when you have small greens, I think that's important. You want guys that you know, hit it close to the hole, hit greens in regulation, things like that. So I do like proximity. And then if you look at last year for putting, you know, strokes gained putting was one. If you look at the top 20 or so that and how they finished last year, that, you know, they were all up there in that putting category. But
isn't that the same every week though? Like the guys that putt well are the guys that are going to win.
No, you're right.
It's hard to predict week to week.
But I think too with bent grass, I tend to lean towards guys that I know putt well on bent grass greens. You know, even the guy like Brant Snedeker who was pretty bad, you know, has not been great of late. He may be somebody that I look at this week just because I know that he tends to putt well on bent grass greens. So, just something I look at. Now,
I'm looking at the past 12 rounds on bent in terms of strokes game putting, and it's Horschel, Kisner, Blair, Cody Gribble, Xander Shiffley, Harmon, Hughes, Martin Piller, who's back for like the first time in ages, Ikeda, Billy Hurley III, and Harris English, and Brian Gay. So, not the guys you would expect, I think, at the top.
No, but so there you go. Maybe some tournament plays right there.
Yeah.
Never know. Real quick, though, I tend to run through past champs. You did mention a few. We had Spieth last year in 2016. Chris Kirk, fellow Bulldog, in 2015. Adam Scott in 2014. You had Boo Weekly in 2013, Zach Johnson in 2012. He also won in 2010 and has a very good course history here, except for the last couple of years it hadn't been incredible, but still pretty good. And then you had David Toms in 2011, and you see if just in the past champs that there's a lot of different players there, a lot of different types of players that can win out here. Weather wise that is it's going to be windy this week. I think that you're going to see at least 10 to 20 miles per hour on the winds every single day. I don't see a lot of rain except for maybe Saturday in the forecast. So that's going to be something to pay attention to on Wednesday. I don't know. How much do you look at the weather, Pat?
I think I look at it too much, and I think it kills me from time to time.
Yeah, I always think people overreact to the weather.
It's just, it's the weather. Like, I know it sounds very simplistic to say, but do, like, people come to us for, like, golf picks. And if we're right once every month and we give a over 50 to 1 winner kind of thing, we're doing really well. Weather's kind of the same way. So I'm looking, I use windfinder.com. I find it's the most reliable one because it gives you, like, a weather station that's near the course. But, like, I'm looking at it right now. So it has the average wind speeds on Thursday starting at 7 a.m. is going to be 10 with gusts up to 26. Then at 10, it's going to be 14 with gusts up to 21. Then it's 21 on average at 1 o'clock up to 29, 22 to 31, then 17 to 32. So it's going to be super windy in the late afternoon, far more in the morning. But if it just got super windy at 7 a.m., you know, it's not going to shock me.
Yeah, I just, again, it's, to me, it's just, I just said again. Again, I got.
Now you tripled up on it.
Yeah, that was a
triple. You tripled down on again.
Yeah, man. All right. Well, we're working on it, Pat. Okay.
Well, not very hard.
That's true. All right. Well, let's get into some picks here. We got the over 10K range this week on DraftKings. You got Jordan Spieth as the highest price guy at 12,000. You got John Rahm at 11,800. Sergio at 10,800. And then Casey and Kuchar rounded out at 10-2 and 10-1. So who are you targeting in this over 10K range this week?
I think I like Sergio the best. And I don't know what to make of Spieth. Like, if I'm going to play, like, 50 lineups this week, like, do you think that Spieth is going to be popular? Because it's always hard for, like, Spieth is the hardest person I have wrapping my mind around in terms of how owned he's going to be. But it feels like everyone is just going to take Rahm.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Rahm is actually, if you look at fantasy draft, he's actually the number one price guy. They took him over Spieth. So I think you're going to see higher ownership with Rahm. Spieth, to me, though, is still going to be pretty highly owned this week. I think you're going to see with there's going to be again, he's missed two straight cuts. So what's everybody going to do? They're going to say, all right, there's no way he's missing two straight cuts. Yeah, three straight cuts. Yeah, he's the highest priced guy out here, but you know he's the class of the field or one of the classes of the field. So I still think he's going to be relatively high owned in cash and GPP. But I'm probably going to fade him again this week.
Yeah, I can see fading Rahm as well. I mean, that's not the most strategic play in the world, but I'm curious to see how he plays one of these less-than-driver courses. Generally, when we see Rahm, he's at a place, he gets the driver out, and he just swings away. I mean, that's his biggest advantage. He crushes it. And even the long iron shots, he's really good. Like, this is going to be sort of a different type of game for John Rahm than we've seen in the past. I mean, he's clearly on his way, if not already being one of the best players in the world, so it's not going to stun me if he comes out and wins, but like, I guess he played well at the Pro-Am at Pebble Beach, and I think that is very similar to how you have to attack this course, but there's more leeway to be had, and I think there's more driver opportunity at Pebble Beach and, you know, the two other courses that they play, but like, it wasn't a surprise to me that he won the Farmers. That seems like the type of course where he would win. He played really well at the Shell. He played really well at the Wells Fargo. He didn't get limited off the tee, but you saw at the Players, like, he was around field average when it comes to off the tee gaining strokes, where he usually just runs away with it because, you know, you have to kind of know where to place the ball. You have to hit these kind of dinky little shots with a 4-iron off the tee, and I don't know if he's there yet where that's just an every week thing where, you know what, I can go out and launch it this week, then I can scale it back the next week. I think that's a part of the learning process. Like I said, I'm not going to be surprised if John Rahm wins, but you have to start nitpicking these guys at the top, and it strikes me like Sergio might get overlooked a little bit, and Sergio seems sort of like the prototypical guy that you want at this course. He can dial it back, he can put it in the fairway, he's an excellent ball striker, and he really impressed me Saturday afternoon with the back nine that he had, because he was kind of out of it, played his way back into it, then he had a sort of a terrible Sunday. But he's won here before, he's 7-7 in cuts made, he has two top tens, he has two wins this year if we include the European Tour, and people just, I don't want to say have soured on Sergio, But it might be a nice week to kind of get him where there's sort of a malaise building around him. So I really like Sergio.
Yeah, we're going to start off in agreement. I love Sergio this week. I do think that I'm going to have some Paul Casey. I mean, that, you know, the 10-2 price doesn't really scare me all that much for him. I mean, if you look at, strokes gained approach, he's number two in the field in that stat category. He's also in the top 10 in strokes gained around the green. So I think Paul Casey is one that I'll definitely have some ownership to. But other than that, I'm probably going to fade the rest of these guys in this over 10 range. And really, one of my favorite guys is going to be Kevin Kisner at 9,700 if we go into that range. I mean, the guy is playing extremely well. I know for a fact from a little bit of a personal correspondence with him that he is just wants to win worse than anybody I can tell you right now. So, and he fits this course perfectly. He's had two straight top tens. And so I think Kiz is going to be a guy that I will start a lot of lineups. And I may just completely skip the over 10K guys and just start with him.
I think that's a sensible move. If you can afford one of the top guys, I'd probably jump up there too. But I love Kiz, I love Leishman, and I love Duffner in that $9,000 range. It's just, I mean, I like Leishman just because it's the putter that's been holding him back recently. He's bled strokes on the green and gaining them everywhere else. Eventually, he is a good putter, so that's going to flip for him. Hopefully, it's this week. But those three guys just really stick out to me. Like, I don't get how Duffner's only $9,000 at this course. No, he's probably not going to win because he keeps melting down on Sundays. No, he doesn't have a top 10 this year, but he's 31 of 33 in terms of cuts since the beginning of 2016. Like, if you're going to tell me I can like have him on a cash game at $9,000 in this field at this type of course, like, sign me up.
Yeah, again, I think Duffner, you are so right on him. And here's the thing with him. If you look at fantasy draft pricing this week, he is the fourth price guy right behind Sergio Garcia. So if you're thinking of value, I mean, what is he here? I mean, he's like, what, 10th down, 12th down, somewhere around there? So for a cash lineup, I don't see how you can avoid Duff this week. And it has great course history here. So I'm with you. This is just a love fest, Pat.
This is why David makes the better picks, because you and I agree on the guys that are probably going to miss the cut.
Yes, that is totally correct, probably. But I do like I like Leishman this week too. I think at 9,300, that's a good price for him. And you're right. I mean, it's the putting that's really got to him. But I am going to have some of him in my lineups. I'm going to fade Bud Colley though. I can't see paying $9,500 for Bud Colley. Now, the guy's been playing great, but I just there's something off there. So maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not gonna do any Bud Colley. How about you? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling the same way. I'll make my preliminary picks now, put them in my cheat sheet, but I do like to hear who other people are talking up throughout the week. And if it becomes one of these things where everyone's like, oh, everyone's fading Bud Colley, I'll probably invest a few shares just because we know what he can do. But like, it was the same thing I talked about on my betting show today. Like, he's 25-1 to win this tournament. Like, that's ludicrous. He's never won before. He's 25-1. He's Bud Colley. He's not John Rahm. He's Bud Colley. Like, let's be real here. Like, Webb at 9,100. No thanks. I mean, as much as I hate the guy, like, Phil at 88 seems far more sensibly priced.
Yeah, I think you're right on Phil. And Bud Colley to me is like the new Charles Howell. He's going to finish, have a lot of top tens. He's probably going to win a lot of money on tour, but he's not going to have many wins. That's just my opinion. And I love Charles. He's a man, but he doesn't win tournaments. So, but yeah, Phil, I mean, yeah, I'd much rather go down to Phil at 8,800, which is odd to me. Again, how is he not in the 9,000 range? I mean,
I don't know, but the guy is a DraftKings machine when it comes to just scoring fantasy points.
No, he is. And I just don't see how you can. I think that he's definitely mispriced here. So Phil Mickelson, if you're playing a lot of cash, you got to put him in your lineups and just let him roll. I mean, he's a core guy for me. And also, I think Adam Hadwin at 8,400. I'm going to be back on him this week. I haven't really talked about him all that much in the last few weeks, but he's made 11 of 11 cuts this year. checks a box on strokes gained approach. He was a top 10 here in 2015. So Adam Hadwin is going to be another guy that I'm going to target in the 8,000 range. And also,
I think Hadwin's a good cash play. I don't know if I would roll him out in tournaments. He's struggled off the tee a little bit. And if he gets himself into trouble off the tee, the strokes gained approach aren't going to mean anything. He's going to have to putt the lights out, and his putter's got progressively worse as the season's gone along.
Yeah, well, I could see that. He is a cash game for sure play, but GPP maybe off of him a little bit for that. But my tournament play of the week is Brant Snedeker at 8,100. And you're just beside yourself right now, Pat. You can't understand that, can you?
All I will say is he was my tournament play of the week last week, and look how that turned out.
All right, so see, here we go. We're going to average out the Pats here. One of us is going to be right. So
I'll probably end up owning shares of him anyway. Yeah. I always own shares of Brant Snedeker.
I'm going to own him this week. Again, he typically putts well on bent grass greens, and I think that, you know, I'm feeling a good week for him. So that's all I'm going to say.
I don't know how the wrist is affecting him, because he skipped the Players because of this wrist injury, and then he plays the next week at the Byron Nelson. Like, he didn't look right at all.
But, so that's your perfect tournament play then, right? I mean, he's going to be low owned for sure.
But he just might be garbage. Like, he might be, like, still hurt.
Oh, he could be. I'm just saying, play him. You say you listen to David more than you listen to me. I'm telling you, this week, listen to me, Brant Snedeker, play him.
All right, I'll play a few. Then, does that mean we're getting back in on Dillette after a terrible week, too?
Yes, we are, as a matter of fact. I am back on Dillette. That's all I'm going to say.
I have a Dillette problem.
What about you?
Yeah, I'll play him for sure. I play him every week, like... which is stupid, because he's weirdly overpriced now. He's not one of my favorite plays on the board, but I just like the way that he can score in bunches. I mean, I would never have him anywhere near a cash lineup, and I would never bet him to win. But DraftKings-wise, he can score. And when you take driver out of his hand, he tends to be a little bit better. So I do like him. I have a feeling that Griot and Ryan Palmer are going to be super chalky in this range, though.
Well, damn, Pat. I mean, those were going to be my next two picks. I guess I like
the guys at the bottom of the 7,000s. I'm going to have a ton of those guys.
All right, so then talk about those guys. I'm going to let you, because I actually, my next two are going to be Palmer and Griot. So you think they're going to be chalky? I like them this week. So let's just go with some other guys. So go.
Okay, there's just some mispriced guys. Like Graham McDowell is $7,400. If it's going to be super windy and you have to hit fairways, I like Graham McDowell. Kyle Stanley is only $7,400. I don't understand why. He's been great. Nick Taylor, who's surging right now. I mean, I'd rather play Taylor over Dillette. He's only $7,300. Charlie Hoffman is $7,300. This is in Texas. Use Charlie Hoffman. And then William McGirt is $7,100. Kevin Tway is $7,100. Like, what? I wouldn't feel bad running out that lineup.
No, I think I like it. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, those guys are all mispriced as far as I'm concerned. I love Kyle Stanley, too. I was surprised you mentioned him, because his course history here isn't very good. But if you look at, you know, just the way he's been playing lately, you know, he was fourth at the Players. He checks all the boxes for me. Strokes gained approach, strokes gained off the tee. Proximity. So I am with you on Stanley, and I think that you're right. There's a lot of guys in this low 7K range that I think you can play, and that brings me to a question I have of you. If you're looking at it this week, what's your strategy going to be? Are you kind of thinking maybe average price line and instead of studs and duds, or are you going more studs and duds?
It depends on... I can see myself going studs and duds if we consider the guys I just mentioned duds. Like, I can play Sergio, a $9,000 guy, and four of those guys, and I feel pretty good about my team for tournament-wise. I mean, even in cash, I like a lot of those guys. And there's even more guys down here that seem to be weirdly mispriced. But where there's only 128 players in the field, that's a bit more than last year. But it's still a lot less than the 144 or even 156 that we get at a normal event, which means more and more guys are going to make the cut. When you have your top 70 in ties, just a higher percentage are going to get through, which means you're going to have more 6 of 6 teams, which means more of the duds are going to make it through the cut. So if you're convinced that this becomes a superstar fest and it's Rahm, Spieth, and Sergio and Kuchar and Casey, like three of those guys end up in the like top 5 or top 10, then going studs and duds isn't the craziest thing, because there's enough value even in the $6,000 area, plus the higher percentage that they make the cut, that studs and duds makes a lot of sense. Now, if people start thinking that way, I'm very okay with going balanced, because the way that they have people priced, at least on DraftKings, even comparing it just to betting odds, like McGirt's 55-1, Kyle Stanley's 55-1, Bill Haas is like 80-1, Nick Taylor's 80-1, and they're behind guys that are like 170-1. So it feels like a mispricing week. So I think you should take advantage of that.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I think, you look at a guy like Bill Haas, who you just mentioned. I mean, 6,900 is the cheapest I have seen him in a long time. When was the last time you saw Haas there? Ever?
No, I'm just looking through his stats, like his pricing week to week to week to week. And like the lowest he's been is he was 7,200 at the Masters and he was 7,000 at the WGC. But those are stacked fields. Yeah. But I still can't figure out what to do with Bill Haas. I don't even know if I want to use him or not. Like, I know he makes cuts generally. I mean, he's missed three in a row now. And I mean, that's why he's kind of faltered. But I don't know. I really thought he would do something at the Heritage, and I thought he would do something at the Players, just because he's a die specialist. And, on paper, this course kind of seems to fit what he does well, but it just seems like his game is out of sorts. Like, he's not making birdies at all. Like, I've never really loved him as a DraftKings player, because you rely so much on his finishing position, because he's not one of those guys that's going to go out and shoot a 62 and light it up with, like, 11 birdies in a round. He's basically going to make, like, 5 birdies at best and just par the rest of the holes and not make bogeys. That's sort of his game.
All right. So, yeah. So, Bill Haas is, I think he could be a good one this week. So, we've covered him. Well, let's just finish out the 6K range here, Pat. I'm gonna go first and then I'll let you finish us out. So, I cannot do a show without having this guy. Well, let me back up. I can't have a show without David Barnett, without picking this guy in just complete bliss with no David. And I'm going to go with Jonas Blix at $6,700. And David will hate that. But Blix has actually played pretty well as of late and putts well on bent grass greens. And if you look at his course history, it's not terrible here. He's got he's played here 4 times. He's missed 1 cut. He's got 2, well, 1 top 10. He finished 11th here in 2013. And he was 55th in 2016. That's not great, but I think, Jonas Blix at $6,700 is a pretty good price for him.
I mean,
another guy that I'm going to
just quickly on Jonas Blix. I mean, the guy just won me a lot of money recently, so I'm in on Jonas Blix. But if he's in the mix come Sunday, like, he can win. He has closing potential. So, he could miss the cut by 20 strokes, because you never know which Jonas Blix is going to show up. But he is a closer, and that's hard to get down in this range.
Yeah, no, you're right. I totally agree. So he's going to be one of the guys that I think I will play down here. And also, Marty Laird.
Party Marty
at 60, yeah. Party Marty at 6,600. He did miss the cut last year, but if you look at his course history, out of 6 times playing here, he's made the cut 5 times. He's had 2 top tens, and so I think if Marty can get that putter rolling, he could have a really good week. And I love that price at 6,600. Another guy that I'm going to throw out is I just love him. He's a local guy for us, and that's Scott Brown at 6,600 as well. This is a course that should set up pretty well for him. He grew up on similar courses, and he's not that long off the tee, but you just don't have to be here. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I think Scott Brown could be one of those guys that just kind of jumps out of nowhere and has a pretty good finish. So there you go. That's my 6K guys. I'm gonna let you roll with it now.
Well, we have two of the same guys, because I like Martin Laird and I like Scott Brown, too. I bet Scott Brown to win this at 175-1, so 6,600 on DK sounds pretty good to me. I like the way he played last week. Problem with Scott Brown is you see him on Sunday and you're like, oh, God, Scott Brown's near the lead. Well, he's not going to win. He seems to be one of those guys that just kind of flirts and never gets it going. Maybe this is the right type of course for him. And I kind of feel the same way about Zach Blair. I don't know what my infatuation with Zach Blair is. Like, it's a really minus EV move ever taking Zach Blair, but he tends to putt really well on bent grass. He got it back together last week after, you know, kind of crapping the bed at the Players a bit. Mackenzie Hughes is someone who's just playing, like, he played really well with the Players. And now, when you see people like Horschel and you see people like Duffner and Kisner have played really well at, like, the RSM, I mean, Mackenzie Hughes played well there as well, so I think that he's someone. But the guy that I really like down in this range, and I liked him last week too, and, you know, he made some eagles, and that's always nice, but it's Boo Weekly. Like, over his past 12 rounds, Boo Weekly is third in this field in strokes gained tee to green. He's fifth off the tee, second in approach. It's just Boo Weekly can't putt. But historically at this course, he has putted quite well. He's a former winner of this event. I just feel like you don't want to make him a core guy. You don't necessarily need to go massively overweight on Boo Weekly, but $6,400 seems to be a pretty good price for him, considering when you look at some of the other guys in his range, you have this guy whose name is, I'm going to try this one out, Jazz. I mean, we can just call him like the Jazz Hands or something like that, but his name is Jazz Jane Watanabe. You got any better pronunciation than that?
No. If anybody listens to our show, they know that me and pronunciations don't go very well, so I'm not even going to attempt that one.
I thought maybe you had like an Appy Barnrat type style with it. Maybe you just knew what it was.
All right, well, so you're asking me to go ahead and try this. Jazz... I'm just going to say it exactly how I think it reads. Jazz Jane Watt Ananad.
Jane Watananad. Jane Watananad. Jane Watananad?
Jazz
Jane Watananad.
Jane Watananad.
DJ Jazzy Jeff is fine.
Yeah, let's go with that. I like that.
Or at least DJ Jazzy Jane. How about that?
Yeah. I love that. And I like, you know, it goes back to the, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel Air. I mean, come on. Great show.
And he'll probably be, like, tossed off the other side of the cut.
Yeah, I don't think he's making that.
There is one guy we didn't talk about that I didn't want to run by you because I can't figure out what to do with him.
Go ahead.
Wes Bryant. He's only $7,000. Doesn't this seem like the perfect Wes Bryant course?
Yeah, I think it does. As a matter of fact, I was looking at him, and I thought this was the first week that he played an event last year after he had the Battlefield promotion on the tour with winning three tournaments last year. But I think it may have been the FedEx St. Jude that was his first one last year. But I think this course is a very good course for him. So I think Wes Bryan could be one of those guys. And then, you know, $7,000 for him, it's just too cheap. And I'll throw out one more that we didn't mention, because we're just going to go all over the place on this show. And that's Harris English at $7,300. Come, listen, let me talk you into this. He's missed his last four cuts.
Yeah, he's good, though.
All right, so what's the narrative in the last two tournaments?
Okay. Guys who are terrible that end up winning.
Yes, so Harris English, he is that guy. And he was second here last year. So there you go.
I'm not doing it.
I didn't convince you?
And that wasn't the strongest argument, that he's missed four straight cuts.
Well, Siwoo Kim.
Sure.
Billy Horschel.
If we had to play that tournament over a million times, I don't think I would have ever landed on Siwoo Kim.
So I'm just trying to follow with the narrative of the last two winners, guys that miss a lot of cuts.
That's the case, it's Stephen Bowditch week.
Oh gosh, well let's not go too far, Pat. Pat number two.
Maybe Matt every week.
No. No. Who's at the bottom, by the way? Who's this guy at the bottom?
Keith Clearwater? He shows up like twice
Keith
a
Clearwater.
Year.
I mean, should he be on the senior tour?
He must be a Texas guy, because I feel like he shows up for like two tournaments a year. He was born in 1959.
Oh, golly. So he's not that old.
He's 57.
What's he doing in this tournament? Did he win or something? Is that why he's playing here?
I think he's like, it was like last week. I think the guy who was like GM of the course was in the tournament.
Yeah, that is. But I've heard Keith Clearwater before. I mean, I think he was a tour player. Well, he's played this event since 2005. He missed 1 year in 2010. That may have been, he probably had a doctor's appointment and missed it that year.
Yeah, he had a colonoscopy.
Yeah. But anyway. All right, well, listen, we got to close it up. But Pat, it has been an incredible show. Thank you for coming on and filling in for David, who is now he gets to edit this and do all that kind of stuff. So that's fun for him, as you may know. But I appreciate you coming on. I think it's been a great show. And any last thoughts before we sign off?
I guess I'll say that I'm glad. I mean, you said at the beginning you guys listened to my show and you guys got into it. I'm glad you did, because you guys are my favorite golf show to listen to.
Wow. I don't know what to say. I'm choking up, Pat. I'm choking up.
Well, I don't listen to many. I don't like to read or listen, and this may sound counterintuitive, but I don't like to listen or read or watch people who do the same things that I do, if that makes a lot of sense. I know it may not, but I don't like to feel like I'm ever ripping anyone off. I like to have, at least in my mind, have a fresh take on everything. But you guys are the exception to that. I love listening to you guys. The rapport is legit. It reminds me of when me and Feinberg had a show.
Which is, by the way, it's a crime that you don't have a show together. Hopefully that will change at some point, because I love Feinberg. Just like we love listening to you, we, again, I appreciate you being on the show with us. We usually sign out, I'll say, David says see ya, I say out. So here we go. We are done with the show. Tour Junkies, thanks for downloading. See ya!
Out!